Thank you.
Okay, can you hear me? My name is Amy, recovered alcoholic, compulsive eater, chaos creator, controller fixer, Al-Anon. So, yeah, I was really nervous about doing this tonight. I spent a bit of time in meditation and praying and, you know, using the fear of prayer and asking God to be with me. So I'm here. I think the second half of Bill's story is an interesting thing because, you know, it's in the middle of the physical allergy, but, you know, it covers from Ebby to, you know, full recovery by the end of the chapter. So, you know, basically, I suppose you could, when speaking about it, speak about any of the 12 steps, because on the pages, the page where he says what he did and he and Ebby did, you know, basically it's a word summary of the steps. I heard Tyler speaking about it once too, is that, you know, it's kind of an odd thing to have stuck in here. And I guess, I don't know, I think maybe it was to give us some hope. You know, we've basically for the first, what is it, 9 pages in the foreword and the doctor's opinion, we've looked at this is how bad it is. You know, this is the physical and this is the hopelessness of it. And then, you know, it's a bit of testimony, I suppose, to give us a bit of hope, maybe keep us going to the rest, through the rest of the physical craving and the mental obsession. That's kind of my take on it. I'm not sure if that's why it's there, but I think that, you know, I it's kind of funny. As far as alcohol goes, I don't think I ever doubted that I had an abnormal physical reaction to that. And so in some ways, I think the first 23 pages were kind of beating a dead horse for me. I was like, yeah, whenever I drink, it's bonkers. It's, you know, the first time I drank, I got drunk, I threw up, I blacked out, I passed out. I got up the next morning and I was like, woohoo, let's do that all again. And it's just, and then you take on the other hand, we were talking about the norovirus earlier. I had norovirus 16 years ago. I had eaten moussaka and then had this horrible night of gastrointestinal disease. And in 16 years, I have not touched moussaka. So, you know, that's just sort of a great illustration of that physical allergy that, my body does not respond normally to alcohol. And I think that with my food and with the controlling fixing, it's a bit more subtle. And I think it's been more of a struggle to find my experience in the physical allergy for those two addictions. And it's interesting because I think that, especially like for the chaos creating or controlling fixing, you know, for me, the best I could do with the physical, and I know a lot of people ID with the adrenaline and that, that didn't resonate for me as much. But, you know, what brought me into, you know, working it around that, those sort of issues were my children. You know, I could not, if my daughter was upset and crying, the physical reaction I had in my body was unmanageable, you know, and I would have clawed my eyes out to get it to stop. And how that manifested was, you know, the poor kid could never have her feelings. I was always either trying to fix her or get mad at her for not feeling better. You know, it was just complete crossing of boundaries and not allowing her to be her own person. And I suppose, you know, the miracle of that sort of a recovery from that kind of a physical allergy is that, you know, today still she's in here in the UK for this most, I don't know if there's too many UK people on here, but I'm sure everybody who is knows it's exam season. And oh my word, the stress and the tears and the, you know, and so I'm just walking through this and she's, of course, predictably upset at various times about the way her studying's going and their fear about, and, you know, it still will sometimes come up, but I don't have to like gnaw my leg off out of a trap to get away from it. I breathe through it and I pray. And some days I'm better at it than others, but, you know, I still have that abnormal physical reaction to, you know, a situation, I guess, that I feel I should be able to control and fix. And it's I have no business, you know, it's God's business, isn't it? But, you know, and that, I guess, is the hope that is offered with Bill's story, you know, that today I can sit with her. And I'm always full of what not to do. I'm quite clear about the things, but sometimes I'm always not sure what to do. And I heard this great analogy with our children that if you think of it like sitting on a bench with them, like our job isn't to pull them off the bench or make a better bench or, you know, not let them near the bench in the first place. It's just to sit there with them and be with them in whatever difficulty they're going through. And I have to say that I've gotten pretty good at that. Not me, myself. I mean, God has provided the power for me to be able to offer that to her today. So, yes, which brings me to, you know, I just was running through the readings, and a couple of things that kind of stuck out to me was where it says, my friend sat before me and made the point blank declaration that God had done for him what he could not do for himself. His human will had failed. And I think that is like a really current for me example of, you know, something I could not do for myself before I took that issue through the steps and before I was, you know, was able to surrender it and ask for help. And I think that's, you know, they talk sometimes in BBA about current day agnosticism, and I was sometimes with alcohol, because it's not a substance physically I sort of wrestle with on a daily basis. You know, it's good for me to look at what I do not turn over, you know, what bits I need God's help with, or I don't even realize I have a problem with. And I think that's one of the, you know, the great processes through the BBA is that when I look at that, you know, I can then ask, and I have a process through these steps that has worked of bringing God into those areas of my life that God isn't now. I mean, I love this. It said, here sat a miracle directly across the kitchen table. He shouted great tidings. I mean, the number of miracles I've seen in my life and in other people's lives, actually, in the last 10 years that I've been doing BBA, like real actual things. I had a friend just telling me about one today that happened for her, you know, an instance. Well, actually, she's told me two in the last 2 weeks of, you know, that thing of where, you know, we're unable to change our internal life without God's help. And that brings us to, it says, I saw that my friend was much more than inwardly reorganized. She was on a different footing. Her roots grasped a new soil. And that's the thing. It's like something, you know, there's this shift inside me that I have never been able to produce myself. And it only happens. And I never know which way it's going to go or what it's going to look like. And that's the bit I hate the most, because I like to know. I definitely most identify as a controller fixer. I want to control. This is what it's going to look like when God relieves us, or this is how God is going to fix us. And it's just, I mean, just recently, I had a bunch of work booked in. I do relief or locum work. And I had a whole month's worth of booked in for May, and it got canceled. And you know, that's fair enough. It's one of the, what would you say, the drawbacks of doing relief work. And where's the huge advantage is I can take time off whenever I want. But, you know, so I lost a whole month's worth of work. And it was just like, it happened. And I was faintly panicked and fearful about it. But, you know, like I said, the girls are in exams this month. And I thought, you know, maybe I'm just going to try to trust God that I was meant to be available as more of a chauffeur, support, maybe, you know, just looking after them to a greater degree than I would have been if I would have had all that work this month. And, you know, sure enough, I managed to make most of the income up with just three other shifts that still left me available for the girls. And then come to find out they need me next month again. So it's just, you know, stuff like that happens. You know, I see those kind of miracles all the time. And I can remember back to, because I was in this program a long time before I actually had a Well, I mean, I had a spiritual experience when I first came in, but I sat a long time in these rooms in the spiritual malady, a long, long ass time. I hope nobody else sits that long. Like it was, what was I, 20 years, I think, nearly. And, you know, I can remember sitting in rooms and this one woman was sharing about how she was having a bad day. So she went in the bathroom during the day and prayed. And I was like, oh my God, how does she remember to do that? I never thought of God between one meeting to the next. You know, I'm like, how do you get that? How? And this is back before people were putting reminders on phones and everything. I might not even had a phone then, but I was just like, why can't I have that? Why don't I remember in a bad day to pray? And today it is, it's throughout the day without reminders on my phone, without sort of post-it notes. I just think of God often, you know, when something, and it isn't even a big thing. It's just like, oh, well, maybe God this, or maybe that, or, you know, it's just, you know, effortless. It's what they said, on a different footing. And I can so clearly remember just looking at that woman thinking, how does she think in the moment to go to the bathroom to pray? And I still don't do that, but I will think of God, you know, I will run it past God in my head. And I could never do that for 20 years. I didn't know how people did that. And so, yeah, I think that was just a bit about the miracles. And then this leads into that another piece that I picked out. It said, if I was to test my thinking, or I was to test my thinking by the new God consciousness within, common sense would thus become uncommon sense. I was to sit quietly when in doubt, asking only for direction and strength to meet my problems as he would have me. And I think with that one, I forgot to ask, how long do I do?
You have 20, about 8 minutes left.
Okay, great. Could you give me a 5-minute warning? Okay. So yeah, this idea that, and when I first, and that was like one of my big sources of agnosticism before BBA was, you know, people in rooms would say, oh, I prayed and God said this, and I prayed and God told me that. And I'd be like, effing God never talks to me. I never hear anything. And in fact, I, you know, by the time I got to BBA, I was like, that's it. God doesn't exist. They never speak to me, or he never speaks to me. And I was just like, so cross about that particular issue and about people. Oh, God got me a parking spot, or God. And it was just maddening. And what I found when I got here is God still doesn't speak to me. But that's okay, because we have a different sort of relationship. You know, I get feelings, I get patience, I get space and breath. And so I can ask for direction, but I don't usually get it. But what I do get is the peace to let things unfold, or for, I suppose, you know, I leave space because I'm pausing and asking for direction, and then God can come in and things can happen that would have never before, because I was busy driving the show. You know, I was in charge. I was making things happen. And so I'm never quite sure what they mean by common sense would become uncommon sense. But I do think that oftentimes when I'm wrestling with something, I don't know that there's a real strong spiritual answer, like that there's a way. I mean, some things obviously there is, but for a lot of things, I don't think God really cares, other than that he's been consulted, you know, that I've had the pause, that I've had the sort of spiritual reach out. And then a lot of times it doesn't matter, like whatever decision I ultimately make, it's just that I've done that. I've turned first that way. And then also that, I just lost my train of thought. Oh, that oftentimes when I feel like I really have to make a decision on this and I don't know, and where's my hand, God's still not speaking to me after 30 years, but I've forgiven him. But I find that I don't, what I've found is that oftentimes I'm trying to force a decision or a path that isn't ready yet. And that if I don't really know yet, it's because there's no answer yet. And oftentimes I'll sit with things, you know, I'll ask God, and something else will happen that will make the whole question irrelevant, like the decision's no longer needed, or some new information comes in that makes it quite clear which path to take. And so I think that for me So I don't know. I just wanted to mention that, because if anybody else who's mad that God isn't speaking to them directly, it doesn't matter. You could still have a great relationship, because, you know, and still find guidance and a way to walk. So let me just see if I had any other little bits I wanted to cover.
That's five more minutes.
Okay, thanks, Jeff. The last little bit that I put one of my little sticky notes in is that that phrase that faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us or we perish. And I think that, you know, when I got here, I spent the 20 years wondering why I was the only one in the 12-step meetings that wasn't having this great life. I mean, now I know that there's probably other people that aren't too, but at the time it felt like I was the only one. And, but then I think, you know, I didn't understand that concept that my entire life needs to go through God, and that the only things that don't are the things that I'm not aware that I'm hanging on to yet. You know, it's revealed, and then as soon as I'm aware, I can, you know, let it go. But just this idea that it's, you know, I spent 20 years of, okay, here's the alcohol, here's the food, I got the rest, and, you know, it just doesn't fly. Not only does it have to work 24 hours a day, but it has to work through every thread of my life. And I tried it without that. I tried, you know, just parceling it out. Okay, God, you can have these bits and I'll take care of the rest. And I was suicidal by the time I got here. You know, it was dire. You know, thank God I didn't pick up a drink, but I think it would have been nicer sometimes. I was so miserable. And I just to me, that's, again, you know, circling back to the miracle thing, that I do have that consciousness, and I didn't ever think it was possible. And so again, you know, for anybody that's, I don't think we have any newcomers, or maybe we do, but, you know, if, or old timers, I was 20 years, you know, if you think you're one of those people who can't find God or can't reach God, that this experience, this BBA work, I was that person, and I got there, you know, I reached God, and I did what the things to clear away so that I could have a relationship that I never thought I could have, and that, you know, has changed my life beyond what I could have ever imagined, and not always in a good way, not always in what I think is a good way, but always in the best way for me, if that makes sense. Because I think oftentimes the things that I think I need are just my addict wanting a quick fix, and that if I sit patiently, the things that I'm ultimately provided with are a deeper, you know, they're where God would want me to be rather than what I would want to jump into, and just to feel better immediately. You know, I so relate to the, you know, the animal in a trap that gnaws its leg off. That's me in a heartbeat and any difficulty. I would just as soon lose a leg as sit with discomfort. And that's where, you know, I suppose that's a bit of the physical allergy too, is that's my knee-jerk response. It's not to bear discomfort. It's not to be patient. It's not to turn to God. But that knee-jerk response, while it may still occur sometimes, is still followed by that pause and turn. You know, not 100%, but the majority of the time, I don't leave a leg in the trap and go on. So anyway, that feels a bit random, that whole analogy, but I think I'll wrap that all up there. And it's so good to be on the meeting. I'm afraid I'm not going to be here again next week because it's bank holiday again, but it's good to see all you guys. Okay.